he's been trying for.
Excuse me?
Kathy has been trying to talk.
Okay, Kathy, go ahead and you're muted, Kathy. We're going to have one more sharing, Olivia, then we'll introduce you.
I'll just make it quick. I'm dying to hear Olivia. I thank you, all three poets. I had been getting very tired of Zooming, and I have another class at 1 o'clock, a social justice meeting. And I thought, oh boy, will I be able to back to back without having lunch and blah, blah, blah. But listening to those three poets makes me so happy that we have Zoom. I live down on Cape Cod and couldn't have gotten to Cambridge. So I just want to thank you for doing this on Zoom, because I just went into a trance listening to those three beautiful poems. I closed my eyes and it was heaven. So thank you. And I'd love to get the two that we can copy and listen to the third. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Olivia Ames Hobletzell is a pioneer in mind-body medicine. She's a writer and Dharma teacher whose work is inspired by more than 40 years of practice in psychology, Buddhism, and the wisdom tradition. Her best-selling book, 10,000 Joys and 10,000 Sorrows, A Couple's Journey Through Alzheimer's, won many awards. She has taught extensively on the subject of her most recent book, Aging with Wisdom, Reflections, Stories, and Teaching. She is now writing a spiritual memoir, and she has been one of our favorite speakers, most remembered. So welcome, Olivia, to our meeting, and we welcome you to do your presentation between 12 and 1, however you designed it, and then from 1 to 1:30, we will break for a discussion of all that's happened this morning.
Okay. Well, thank you. I trust you can hear me.
Yes.
I'm really, really happy to be with you. And I, too, was so touched by the three poems. And maybe just to make the transition, let's close our eyes for just a minute and take those sacred breaths that Karen referred to. I'm very aware of how important it is to transition between phases of our day. So just come into your body, into your heart center. And not only becoming really present to yourself, but present to all of us gathered here in this wondrous medium. So, blessings. I just want to say it's wonderful to be back with you, even in this mysterious medium. And I can't even remember when I was with you before, except we were all together. And my guess is it's about 10 years ago, but I have no idea, because part of this aging process is that time becomes much more impressionistic. Have you noticed? So I would like to start with a story that just sort of came to my mind when I was thinking about what I wanted to speak about with you. And it goes back. It's a story that my mother told me about one of her dearest friends, whose name was Dotsie. And Dotsie took up painting in her 70s. And she was just taken over by the thrill of this creative process. And she was also very honored, not only by having eventually a one-woman show, but when the burglars broke into their apartment, the burglar stole one of her paintings. She considered that an honor. But the story was about her 80th birthday. And there were all these friends gathered and toasts and all that. And at the end, somebody said, Dotsie, what are your reflections? What is it like to turn 80? And apparently she paused a minute, and she said, well, as I see it, first we get born, And from then on, it's tricky all the way. And it's tricky all the way. And I think that sort of encompasses the title of this talk, which is really about challenges and opportunities. So I just wanted to bring in woman's wisdom to start with. And then turn to a quotation from Henry Nouwen. And you may know, some of you, that he was a great Catholic theologian, a prolific author. And I had the great privilege of taking a course with him in the middle 80s. It was a profound experience for me. And these are his words about aging. Aging is the turning of the wheel, the gradual fulfillment of life, the gradual fulfillment of the life cycle. Aging does not need to be hidden or denied, but can be affirmed and experienced as a process of growth by which the mystery of life is slowly revealed to us. So again, aging is the gradual fulfillment of the life cycle. Aging does not need to be hidden or denied, but can be affirmed and experienced as a process of growth by which the mystery of life is slowly revealed to us. Well, I think instantly of your grandmother Sunflower. You know, you watch that beautiful growth up to the second story, even like my dahlias did that once too. So aging is a process of growth. That's the first phrase. And the second phrase is how the mystery of life is slowly revealed to us. And to me, this is the deepest question of all. You know, why are we here? Who are we now? What is this all about? You know, that's the mystery. And I think all three of your poems, you know, reflected that in a really beautiful way. So very briefly, even if I've told you this before, for those of you who may be new or haven't heard me speak before, very briefly, I've always loved being around elders, and I trace it to my Danish grandmother, and I refer to this in the book, because she looked at me with unconditional love. And that experience, I can close my eyes and be with her right now, because I think we really exist beyond space and time. And I can feel in my heart center that love, that unconditional love. And you might question, well, who's that been for me? It may not have been quite unconditional, because so much of loving isn't. But maybe somebody, well, who just loved you a lot. It's a very precious person in our lives. So moving on, I was always intrigued by the whole subject of aging. And of course, now I'm really in the middle of it. I just turned 86 on Tuesday. And the whole subject of death and dying, I did hospice work. And then the most formative experience was when my husband was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And my writing the book, which you referred to, Linda, 10,000 Joys and 10,000 Sorrows, that was really my healing. But I was really called to write it because of Hobbes and my background. My husband was named Hobbes. Because our background in psychology and meditation made the world of difference in how we dealt with the enormous challenges of that illness. So in turn, that led to my giving a lot of talks and my being led. Well, no, it's been a real theme in my life. The whole subject of aging, my love of elders, my seeing beauty in old age, my seeing beauty in our wrinkles, in our sagging bodies, all of it. It's so natural. Sagging bodies, sagging leaves on the sunflower plant. It's all connected. It's beautiful. So here we are. And I always make this point. The elder years are the most heroic of our life. And this is not the view of our culture. Our culture, as we know, is youth worshiping and age denying. And I think that's most deeply rooted in the fear of death, which we also unconsciously deny as a culture. And so I always want to say this because I feel that these later years, of course, become the years of greatest challenge. And so the question is, how do we respond to that? And to me, it's an heroic possibility. I don't care whether people don't see it that way. I just feel passionately that's how we, that's the view, using that Buddhist word, the perspective that we are invited to have. So I want to talk about four or five, depending on time, sort of main focuses or issues for our discussion. And the first I've already referred to, really, which is, what is our attitude towards aging? And I think Henry gave a beautiful outlook on it with his quotation. But what is yours? You know, how do you see this whole subject? And to remember that I didn't see this. I think I just read this, but Oprah Winfrey was interviewing Maya Angelou, who was her mentor. And so she asked her, she had just turned 85, that is, Maya Angelou had just turned 85. And so Oprah Winfrey asked her, so how do you feel about being 85? And apparently Maya answered, if you get a chance, do it. But this reminds me actually the story I started with. I didn't see the connection until just this moment, but it's such a lighthearted answer. It's humorous, it's open, it's adventurous. Her answer, it's like, if you get a chance, do it. Well, I think that's a really important clue to these years, that they are lightened. We carry them more easily if we have a lighthearted outlook, if we have openness and a sense of adventure towards what we're experiencing. So that's my first issue I want to point to. Now, the second one has been a really important and ongoing theme for me since the early 70s when I first heard it. And, you know, back then, I guess I was in my early 40s. I can't do the math, so it's all right. It was a long time ago. And I heard Ram Dass, and I'm sure many of you know that marvelous man who brought the wisdom of the East to the West. He is the first person that I heard use this term, conscious aging. Conscious aging. It dropped kind of into my heart like a depth charge. It's like, conscious aging, what does that mean? Well, I think I could talk a long time about it, but I think I'll just name a few things that I think it means. I think it means acceptance of change. In other words, the great law of impermanence. And secondly, it means living with awareness towards all things, you know, living with mindfulness, living each breath being a sacred breath. Each moment is precious. This is the only moment we have. You know, we only live our lives in this moment, and then it's gone. So that's a really big one. A third one is openness to the unknown. And of course, I think we live facing more unknowns at this point than we ever have, whether we recognize it or not. And then another one would be awakening to our deepest nature. And that's part of the second one I mentioned, that whether it's through our faith or our meditation practice or whatever our contemplative practices are, it's really the essential calling of our lifetime. And it's interesting because in India, a place I've been a number of times, that is considered the main purpose of everyone's life, which is self-realization. And that means the capital S self, that which is beyond ego. We need ego and we need the smaller self, but opening into something so much greater that we are, that we sense. We sense it calling us. Yeah. I can become sort of feeling slightly rapturous just talking about it. So finally, acceptance of our mortality. Robert was just talking about that. So there we are. Those are some reflections on this topic of conscious aging. It's a big one. Now, here's another one. And I thought I heard one of you mention Stella Fox earlier. I wasn't sure I believed my ears, but I want to tell you a little story I heard just last week from a beloved friend of mine who is actually a music therapist, and she uses music in going into elder communities and nursing homes and with the dying, because she's a longtime hospice worker. And Eileen Running Deer is her name, wonderful name, Eileen Running Deer. She's just written a book on music therapy. And she told me that she'd been asked by her church in Tunbridge, Vermont, to give a sermon. She's not a minister, but they were doing interim coverage. And so in her sermon, she talked about Stella Fox, who is one of the wayshowers that I describe in my book. I was really touched by this. Now, let me tell you, Stella, I probably spent 3 hours with her in my entire life. And yet I was forever impressed by what had happened to her, just happened to her. I was visiting her daughter, Lorraine. They're both full-blooded Native Americans, half Cree, half Blackfoot. And Stella had led a really difficult life. It's the life that we perpetrated on our first peoples. She lived on reservations. She'd been sent to one of those terrible schools, boarding schools where they stripped her of her native heritage. She had four husbands, all of whom were alcoholic and abusive. Her life had been really hard. And so when I was visiting, they had just come back from the Sundance, which is the annual gathering of the native tribes to celebrate. And I'm starting to get the shivers just telling you this story because Stella was the oldest person there. She was invited to be the officiant for the ceremonies, and she was taught how to do that. It was transformative for her life because she was honored. She was recognized. She was turned to as an elder. She was invited into the circle in an absolutely beautiful way. And when I saw her, it was about 2 weeks later, she still carried the kind of radiance from that experience. And so she became one of the, I think it was six people that I describe in the book. And what is this term, wayshower? I don't know where it came from. I'm sure I didn't coin it, but I titled that part of the book, Wayshowers, and she was one of them. She was one of them. And we don't know how we touch other people's lives. You know, she doesn't know. Well, she does now because she's deceased, but I've told Lorraine and I are still in touch. To me, this is so beautiful because it's about interconnection. It's about healing. It's about all that can happen in the late years. So I've gone so far afield with this story, I've forgotten, but I'm coming back to it. The main point, which is the issue of our identity as elders, and it may invite some reframing. And this was the story that Eileen told me, that after her sermon, many people came up to her afterwards. One woman was obviously particularly perplexed because she said, "No, I don't have a job anymore. I can't identify myself through my work, and I always have. And I just feel like my life has lost a big piece of its meaning, and I'm looking for meaning in life." And she said, I don't know who I am in the same way that I used to know. And so she said, "Well, I go to see shut-ins, people who can't leave home, elders, and I'm doing Meals on Wheels, and I'm doing some things like that, but it just doesn't seem the same." And Eileen said to her, "That's so beautiful, because the smallest acts of kindness involve generosity, involve kindness, involve compassion, involve a loving heart. And your presence is the gift. It's not about your career or your other means of identity. It's about your presence. And that's the gift." And so I just leave you with that story, because I wasn't going to tell it until I woke up this morning and it was in my mind. And I thought, I need to tell that story. And there's also a little section in the book that's called Who Am I Now, I think, or it's something about identity. I honestly don't remember. But it may be an issue for some of us. So that's another of these issues. Now, let me move on to one that is without doubt the most important and sacred message that I received that has to do with aging. And again, you know, I got it in my early 40s. Thanks, Ram Dass. And this is thanks to Mary McClellan. Maybe some of you even knew Mary. She was married to David, who was a psychologist at Harvard, and in fact, one of the people who had to fire Ram Dass, Richard Alpert. But they were really, really good friends always throughout the whole thing. That's a whole other story. Sorry, I couldn't resist. Anyway, again, shows you how we touch each other. So this story goes back to being in a little meditation group that we had back then. Mary was in it, and she was living with cancer. And we came together after the summer, and she was holding a piece of light blue airmail paper. This dates me. Anybody who remembers this, they were called aerograms. Do you remember any of you? Anyway, so Mary said, "I want to read something to you. It's a message from a friend of mine in Europe who's told me the most beautiful words that come from Teilhard de Chardin." Teilhard was a French priest like Henri Nouwen. He was a mystic like Henri Nouwen, an author, a philosopher. Maybe some of you have read his works like Divine Milieu. Very challenging, some of it. I have to say, hard going for me. In any case, here was the quotation that was on that aerogram. I have to find this now. Okay. So these are the words of Teilhard de Chardin. He wrote, this is a paraphrase, "When in my younger years, I thanked God for my expanding, growing life. But now, in my later years, when I find my physical powers growing less, I thank God also for what I call the grace of diminishment." The grace of diminishment. I heard those words, and maybe you've heard me tell this story before, because it's a signature story. And you know, like that term conscious aging, this one really, this one dropped into my heart too. And in fact, after our meditation meeting that day, I went home and I took out a file and I labeled it aging and wisdom. That was in the early 80s. That was 45 years ago. And I had no idea where that file would lead me, or what was in that file, or what I was internalizing in the way of wisdom for how to live in these years. So I just want to tell you that I have contemplated this term deeply. And when Hob and I were living with his Alzheimer's, because of course it's a joint journey, of course I forgot it many times, but when the going was really tough, I'd sometimes remember it. Because the question is, how do we find grace in diminishment? Or to put it another way, how do we find the gifts in adversity? Huge challenge. And yet, to me, so inspirational, because it's an invitation. Can we look that way? Can we find the gold, if you will, that's hidden in the rock, you know, sort of alchemical image? So you could say, but who wants diminishment? You know, who wants it? But again, going back to Grandmother Sunflower, look what happens. Look what happens in nature. Look what happens to that beautiful plant that grew to the second story. Look what happens to our bodies. Look what happens to our hearing, to our vision, to our energy. That's a big one. Our energy. What happens to our minds? We notice the gaps. We notice the short-term memory loss. We notice the names that aren't there. It's all in the natural order of things. That's another way that I reassure myself that I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm fine in the midst of all this loss. That's grace with diminishment. So I spoke about the way showers, and let me come back to it again, because who are your way showers? It's really worth thinking about this, maybe even writing to them or about them, because what I love about this term is that it's not about what you're doing in your late years. It's about presence again. I want to come back to that word. It's about the presence that you're bringing to whatever life is calling you to. And I used to tell Hob, he was a teacher his whole life. And of course, the last chapter where he was a Dharma teacher was really, in a sense, the crowning of his teaching career. Although he never saw Dharma teaching as a career, it was the heartfelt expression of his practice. Whoa, I'm moving myself with my own words that I'm telling you. I'm also being taken back to the vividness of that experience. And I know that I'm sure some of you have lost a beloved, and how it tears at the heart. And I used to tell him, I used to say, you can't teach anymore with words, but you're teaching with your presence. your teaching with how you're dealing with this dementia and the loss of your words. And he, unlike many people, was very open about it. He used to tell people, oh, I have Alzheimer's. I may not remember stuff, but I have Alzheimer's. Yeah, it's like people were startled at that because many, of course, don't even know or can't or won't or don't want to talk about it. So that was one way that I brought this grace of diminishment idea, if you will, forward to him, that it might be part of his experience. So one last thing about one last sort of reflection on this phrase, the grace of diminishment. It came to me just a few days ago when a very wise friend of mine, very amazing astrologer, made a reference to Teilhard de Chardin. She happens to be French, and she knew the original from which this phrase came, the grace of diminishment. And she said, you know, the words that he used were, now listen to this, divinizing our diminishments, hallowing our diminishments. Look at those words, divinizing, to make divine or to make sacred, as Karen was talking about the sacred breath, divinizing our diminishments. Boy, is that one hard. That one's really hard when we're dealing with pain, we're dealing with loss of sight, we're dealing with hard of hearing, and yet our deepest understanding perhaps can be that what really matters is this soul essence of who we are. The self with a capital S, the nature of our heart mind, that which we nourish through meditation and prayer and any contemplative practice, whatever yours might be, that's what really matters. And that ultimately is what can carry whatever happens to us. So, those are some of my reflections on this grace of diminishment. How amazing when I think of all the interconnections that have enriched the meaning of that for me. Not only what I've been told with the quotation from the Irogram, but from my own reflections, from what subsequently people told me. It's like this process we're in, it's lifelong, of sort of composting our life experience that becomes our wisdom. Isn't that a beautiful thing? That's a beautiful thing. So, aging, this is not a whole new topic, but just an observation that aging is both a descent, that's diminishment, and an ascent. And I think I was first sort of awakened to these words through an author named Kathleen Fisher, who wrote a beautiful book called Winter Grace. Aging and Spirituality is the subtitle. Winter Grace, Aging and Spirituality. Very inspiring book. I read it a long time ago. But I wrote down these words. Winter grace is courage grown larger in the face of diminishment. Beautiful. Winter grace is courage grown larger in the face of diminishment. There it is. You see the same idea. It's like how, and it goes back to the first quotation of Henry's about growth, that aging is about the growth. It's about the growth at this point that is being invited of us And the invitation is there every minute of every day. I mean, that's a little heavy. Come on. But you know, if we're trying to live mindfully, that's our practice, isn't it? So I just say that as a reminder. I'm always trying to inspire myself, you know, that's really what this is partly about. Anyway, okay. So here, I just want to leave a time. I want to share one more sort of anecdote, wisdom teaching that connects to aging as a process of growth, of opportunity. And again, you see, it goes back. It goes back to the enormous challenges of living with my husband's Alzheimer's. So my first instinct when life hits me with something hard, well, it's first to turn to my own practice, but in this case, to turn to a spiritual friend that I have had, I've been blessed to have. The term in Buddhism is Kalyanamitra or Mita. That means spiritual friend. And I was just incredibly blessed to meet someone named Tulku Tondop, a Tibetan, back when I first started looking for an enlightened teacher. Well, I wasn't ready for the Tibetan tradition yet, but I met him. And I stayed in touch with him on and off. Sometimes I wouldn't see him for 5 or 8 years, but then I'd go to him. So when I learned about Hobbes' diagnosis, I went to see him. And again, you may have heard this story, but it's timeless for me. It's powerful because I explained the situation and he said to me, quote, any situation can be a source of growth. This is difficult, but it is a teaching, a training, and a blessing. What? When I heard that then, I thought, a blessing? I don't know about that. But again, when you hear something wise, it drops in and it goes on living within. And so he said, this Alzheimer's, this journey is difficult, but it is a teaching, a training, a blessing. He said, this illness could have healing elements. Everything could be a practice for both of you, he said. Taking care of him will become like a meditation for you. It will become your practice. And he went on to describe how even giving a spoonful of food to somebody involves the paramitas or the sacred qualities. It's so beautiful, you know, something so simple involves kindness and compassion, generosity, patience, equanimity, those qualities. And going back to the woman that went to my friend Eileen after the sermon, Eileen said to her, it's your presence. It's what you bring to the smallest act of kindness. So that's why I wanted to share this with you, that story. So let me conclude so we have time for discussion. A few concluding comments. Again, the last chapter of life is the most heroic. How do we meet the challenges of aging? First and foremost, by deepening our inner life, by deepening our spiritual life. That is the calling of the late years. No matter where you are in your journey, whether you consider yourself a beginner, whether you've been at this for 50 years, or whatever it's been for me, we always have beginner's mind. There's always the opportunity to start anew for freshness, for openness to the unknown. Ah, yes. So although I didn't speak about this, it's cultivating gratitude as a practice. Perhaps it's what I spoke about, the invitation to reframe our identity, however we've been sort of thinking about where I am in my world. I think that's kind of worth some thought. And then perhaps, and this is what I came to at the end, when I, through my writing, because writing has been a spiritual practice for me, that that what is most difficult in our lives, we can look at as an initiation. Our dark nights of the soul are initiations. Our struggles are initiations. It's like they're always introducing us to the next possibility. And that's how I came to see what Bob and I had been through. I said at the end, I think, our aging is an invitation to deepen in love towards everyone, including ourselves, having compassion and love for ourselves and all. And so I think of, I want to end actually with the words of Jack Kornfield, one of my original teachers. He said, and quote, in the end, three things matter the most. How fully did you live? How well did you love? How deeply did you let go? So again, in the end, three things matter the most. How fully did you live? How well did you love? And how deeply did you let go? So thank you. Thank you for listening. And now I guess I give it back to you, Lenza, and I have to join you on full screen here. Hold on. Yes, where do I go? Here we go.
So thank you so much, Olivia. You have given us a lifetime of things to consider here. And this is still your time, and so we would welcome any questions or comments or reflections to Olivia until 1 o'clock, when we have our whole group discussion, which will include our poems as well. So who has something they want to say to Olivia? Yes, Marcia. You're muted.
Olivia, thank you so, so much for this beautiful summary. For those of us who are aging, which of course is every human being on the planet and all the sunflowers. My mother had Alzheimer's, and instead of going back to being a pharmacist after she died, I decided to be a caregiver, a professional caregiver for Alzheimer's patients. And one of the ways that I've been able to do it, caregiving for 30 years, is to do it in a Buddhist way and to take Ram Dass's book, Be Here Now. And that's what I love about Alzheimer's patients, is that they're just here now. And then as the disease progresses, they're more here now. And so what I try to do is just join them in the be here now. And I mean, I could tell you 1,000 stories, but that's why I keep doing it. I'm 84, and I just, so far I'm able to continue doing it. I have 5 clients right now per week. And I receive joy from them, and I give joy too, also reciprocating.
That's beautiful, Marcia. Thank you. Have I got your name right?
Yes, Marcia.
Mm-hmm. So beautiful work you're doing. I bow to you. I think that's so, so deeply heart touches the heart. And a couple of things come to my mind. Well, first of all, how you took your experience with your mother and then made that your work. That's what a gift. And I'm sure that you bring to it all that you learned through going through that with your mother. And yes, it's about love. And the thing that's so interesting, and I know you know this, but maybe some others don't, that feeling, although many a person with dementia gets this kind of blank, almost expression, feelings are always there. Right. And it's always there to touch. And we can break through what seems like a wall and touch. And in fact, there's a beautiful video I once called something about There Is a Bridge. And it's about, there's a little sequence in it of this woman in her 90s who was going to visit somebody with dementia, and she started to sing You Are My Sunshine. And this patient just opened up like that sunflower, you know. So that's what that's about the love. So I really appreciate your bringing this to everybody else. That's beautiful.
I've had the honor of working with 201-year-old women.
Oh, my goodness.
I've got one right now who's a character and a half. She has just a little bit of dementia, not too much. She's funny. Oh, gosh, I laugh. Okay. But I do a lot of touch for health. I kind of rub their backs and touch their arms and touch their heads the way you do with children.
That's the best. How wonderful. Oh, well, blessings on your work is all I've got to say.
Thank you.
One more thing, also you said this, but we were in Plum Village at Thich Nhat Hanh's center. Some of you, I'm sure, have heard of him. And another Dharma teacher was there named Joan Halifax. She's written wonderful books, by the way, on this whole subject of death and dying. And she came to Hob and she said, Hob, because he was living with Alzheimer's then. She said, Hob, you've gotten to where we're all trying to get, the here and now. And that's so beautiful, Marcia, because that's what you just said too.
Yes, I studied with her at Omega for a long weekend one time. She's beautiful.
Oh, good. So isn't it wonderful how we're doing all this weaving? I love it.
Oh, I love the weaving. Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marcia, and thank you as well for what you're bringing to the world. It's a lot of dedication. So Rebecca has written in and said, blessings on your work of love, Marcia. Gratefully, Rebecca. Any other comments or questions, stories we want to share with Olivia? Ivo? And then Liz.
I am really so thrilled to be here today. It's really deeply informing, and thank you, Olivia. I mentioned Stella Fox, and when I read your Aging with Wisdom and also attended your sessions, I just wanted to stand up and say thank you so much for bringing two great memories back to me. And as a result of that, I actually wrote a long poem about both my mother and my mother-in-law and their involvement with two Sundance experiences, which came about because just what you said, they were older. My mother-in-law was in a wheelchair, and yet they were completely honored on these days unexpectedly. So I just say thank you for that. And each spring, my husband and I were always getting ready for the Boston Marathon. And it was very nerve-wracking. And we always ran together year after year after year. And so this year, I can relax. I do not have to run the Boston Marathon.
That's wonderful. Well, Rebecca, I wanted tell you, I'm back in touch with Lorraine by Zoom. There has been a 5-year gap or lapse, doesn't matter, you know, how we reconnect right away. And I will tell her what you just said, because I told her Eileen's story, that Eileen had talked about Stella. I mean, isn't it amazing? To me, I'm filled with wonder just hearing this. So I really thank you for sharing that. That's very beautiful. Yeah.
And there's a question here, Olivia, about, are you still teaching at Cambridge Insight Meditation Center?
Yes and no. I will start teaching the Elder Drop-In again in July. But I've suspended teaching the course on aging, awareness, and awakening while I'm writing, because I feel a tremendous urgency about the writing, because my sight is very challenged, and I want to be able to write. It's going, and so it looks like that's my really big challenge. So the answer is I may teach it again in the fall, but I teach a class here. I'm in an elder community in Lexington, and I teach every week here. I have to find the balance. So I keep being asked to teach it again, but I have to wait. Sort of priorities are a big issue for us. I'm sure you've noticed.
Yes. The heroism of meeting your eyesight. And doing what you really want to do. Liz, I think you were next, and then Lee.
Bob, too.
And then Bob. Liz, you're muted.
Olivia, thank you so much, as always. I have a question. My older brother just died a couple of weeks ago, and he was my closest person in the whole world since I was a child. And you mentioned that Jack Kornfield had talked about how deeply did you let go. I'm wondering if and how that could apply to mourning and waking up with a stab in my stomach every day, because I feel so lonely without him.
Oh, goodness. Thank you so much, you know, for mentioning this. And you and I go way back, because you've been at CIMC. And it's a very, very profound question. I actually hear Jack's words in a kind of universal way of, we let go of an afflictive thought. We let go of something from the past that we don't need to hold on to. The biggest letting go, of course, is the end of life. Can we let go of this body? When it comes to grief, grief is such a mysterious, timeless, cyclical process. And I feel like there's the stage that you're in, it's still so raw. You know, heart is in pain, and we need to really feel that because the tears are about love. They're about your love for your brother. And that's what's so paradoxical, isn't it? That love and grief, they're like this. They're totally intertwined. And we, you know, there's no answer except to live through it, to live with it and through it, and come into the heart as much as you can. I think that's the best answer I can give. But thank you for sharing that, because that sounds like such a big loss. And we all will have that biggest loss, you know, that just comes with this territory. So I guess with this many blessings as you go through with that, you know, and thank you.
Yeah, we're sorry to hear that, Liz. Okay, Lee, and then Bob, and then Karen.
My question is similar, but it takes a slightly different direction. That last sentence, how deeply did you let go? If it's the person who is aging, the individual to whom, for whom we're caring, Is there ever a time when it's okay for them to completely let go and facilitate their passing?
You're talking about that kind of ultimate moment?
Yes.
Let them go? Is that
where the person who is experiencing the end of life, is there ever a time when you feel it's okay for them to let go, for them to take charge and end their life?
Absolutely, absolutely, because of course it's such a mysterious process. And one of the things, I was with a dear friend last Sunday who died. Well, I was with him Saturday. He died on Sunday. And I asked, we were gathered around his bed, and it was family and about 5 Dharma friends. And I asked his wife, have you told him? He was sort of in a coma, but you hear in a coma. Have you told him it's okay to go? And she said, oh yes, I've told him many times. And so that sometimes is the critical moment. So I could tell stories about that, but I hope that answers your question, that we need to let that person go. And that's not that we leave them out of our heart. They're still in our heart, but we let them go from that physical form.
Thank you.
Blessings. Yeah. Yeah.
And Bob.
Yes. Thank you, Olivia, for, you couldn't have spoken more to my heart and mind where I'm at. Some of the triggers were really something. And I, you know, part of getting older, I had to write down the 3 things that sort of I wanted to briefly mention because I would have forgotten them. That's one of the diminishments, not being able to remember as astutely as I used to be able to.
Yeah.
But my name, my last name, Weber, actually is Germanic, and it means the weaver. The one who weaves. And that was mentioned earlier about weaving. And I think that's where I am in my life right now, is trying to weave together what I was and who I am and where I'm moving. I've spent my life being a human doing, and now I'm trying to be a human being much more, sort of in keeping with some of the themes about the kindness, the generosity. So one of the people who's helped me, who died last fall, was Connie Goldman, who was an author. She was a PBS broadcast journalist. But Connie and I used to talk and just have the funnest times. She lived in Wisconsin, and I'm here, and we chatted. But Connie wrote a book called Who Am I Now That I'm No Longer Who I Was?
Yeah.
I'm facing that question. Maybe many of us are. Who am I now that I'm no longer who I was? But the last thing was diminishments that you mentioned. And I have grown very accustomed, but not comfortable with, nor courageous in the face of yet, the diminishments that I'm experiencing. And I grew up a jock, you know, sports, and now I just, so many of the skills are gone. And I was asked, I was a Jesuit for 10 years also, and I was asked to give a talk to the retired Jesuits out in Weston. And the theme they wanted was unhallowing our diminishments. And I thought, I don't want to talk about that. But I actually wasn't sure I wanted to go ahead with the talk, but I decided to go ahead at the encouragement of the guy who invited me. And one of the books I was put in touch with was from, I don't know if you can see that, maybe not. It's from the Pendle Hill pamphlet series from the American Friends Society, written called Unhallowing One's Diminishments, which really, I think, helped to deepen some of my appreciation for what you were talking about. It's a Pendle Hill pamphlet, P-E-N-D-L-E, Hill 292, and I would recommend it to put it in your mixer and come up with a wonderful, wonderful mix. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
I think you're the Bob that we have a mutual friend in Robert Jonas.
We do, yes.
He told me that we should. So we're meeting right now. Yes, it's amazing. But anyway, I have that pamphlet, and I have gone back to it because, as I remember, he talks about well, Desjardins, and about his Parkinson's and changing rigor mortis to rigor amoris. In other words, stiffening in his body, to see that as the stiffening of love at that process, that's mind-boggling. So the fact that you bring up this pamphlet and that I should have had the good fortune to read it is amazing. But it's a perfect example, isn't it, of what we're talking about here. I'm so thrilled. First of all, happy to meet you, but to have this come full circle. So that's amazing, amazing.
Thank you, Bob.
If you want, Jonas just gave a podcast on the Henry Nouwen Society website on his newest book. And it's wonderful to it's about the Trinity.
Well, I know I've read his newest book and I haven't written him yet. So because we're talking, I will definitely write him and I will also listen to the podcast.
Okay.
I'm just making a note. That's wonderful. Is it going to happen or has it happened?
It happened and it was on last week's week ago's meditation series. I'm sure you can find it. Just go to, you know, the Henry Nouwen Society and search podcast for Jonas.
So I taught for 8 years at the Empty Bell and I've taught together. So there's a lot of connections here and I'm delighted, just delighted. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And everyone here. And everyone. And we're moving actually into our discussion place. It's 1 o'clock and Karen, you're first up, but we're opening this up to discussion, which means any reflections to those who shared poems, any reflections to Olivia or to each other, things you want each other to know.